From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On December 20th, 2019, the U.S. military established a sixth branch, signed into law by President Donald Trump as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, Space Force, which started out as an idea that Trump promoted in the early days of his presidency, came into being with little to no opposition from both major parties, and is the start of U.S. militarization of space. Proponents of Space Force say the U.S. has to be militarily supreme in space in order to counteract China and Russia. But at what cost? My guest is Carl Grossman, professor of journalism at State University of New York College at Old Westbury, and is the author of the book The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet. He's an associate of the media watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and his latest article is called The Very Bad Space Force Deal. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Pleasure to be with you.
So this particular deal to bring Space Force into being, I mentioned, had little to no opposition, but we're sort of hearing that there was a deal that had to be struck in order to make it happen, and that was for federal employees to get paid parental leave. Was there really, truly opposition by anybody to the creation of Space Force? When I say anybody, I mean elected officials.
Well, there were some Democrats who voted against this National Defense Authorization Act, including here from New York, Jerry Nadler, who is chair of the Judiciary Committee, among others. But a majority of Democrats voted with Republicans for this NDAA, which would establish a Space Force, a sixth branch of U.S. Armed Services. And according to a number of reports, a deal was worked out by Jared Kushner. And in return for the Democrats voting for this Space Force, what the administration provided was, as you mentioned, paid leave for civilian government employees, which in fact is common around the world. So, I mean, it was quite a trade-off for parental leave. The Democrats voted for, well, frankly, what I think is going to be a tragedy of historical proportions. What we have here is sort of an encore of Reagan's Star Wars. We have the United States now moving to weaponize the heavens.
If you look at the new Space Force website, and it has a website now, spaceforce.mil, there's a photograph right on there showing a couple of military folks. In the background, it says, "Where space superiority begins." It doesn't seem that they're hiding the fact that this is essentially for the U.S. to be the supreme military force in space, just as the U.S. military is the supreme and the strongest force on Earth, right?
Now, over and over again, is that it's not enough to have American presence in space. We need to have American dominance in space. And that's why he's been pushing successfully. He signed the NDAA, establishing this Space Force. Now, this flies in the face, and it's so important to understand, flies in the face of the Outer Space Treaty of 1967. That's the landmark treaty. It was put together by the United States, the former Soviet Union, and the United Kingdom, and it prohibits weapons of mass destruction in space, and it designates space as a global commons for peaceful purposes. What the U.S. is doing is saying, forget about the Outer Space Treaty, as in fact the Trump administration in recent time has said, let's forget about this treaty and that treaty. And let me also add to this, for the last 20 years now, Russia, China, and our neighbor Canada have been seeking to broaden, to expand the Outer Space Treaty to prohibit any weapons in space, not just weapons of mass destruction. It's called the Paros for Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space Treaty, and they want to keep the Outer Space Treaty, in fact, broaden it to retain space as a place for peace. But what's occurred over and over again with Republican presidents and Democratic presidents is the United States at the United Nations has voted no to the Paros Treaty. I've been at the UN and I've seen the no vote. And what the U.S. has been doing is essentially vetoing the Paros Treaty. And so when I hear that the U.S. needs to have this space force to counter Russia and China in space, Russia and China very, very much, and I've been to China. I've spoken to Chinese officials. I've been several times to Russia. And these countries don't want to blow their national treasuries on deploying weapons in space. They want to keep space for peace. And it's shamefully, frankly, it's our country, the United States, which, and now with Trump, like with Reagan, pushing, turning space into an arena of war.
Right. If there was an agreement from all countries to basically leave space alone, to leave the war fighting to planet Earth, there would be no question of who reigns supreme in space. Essentially, when you take away that agreement or any sense of an agreement, you start yet another arms race. What's really interesting and fascinating to me about this whole issue around Space Force is how those people who might consider themselves very liberal get literally starry-eyed, pun intended, by this idea of a Space Force. Even the font on the Space Force's website is this Star Wars, you know, science fiction style font. And we've had decades of, you know, Hollywood glamorizing and romanticizing the idea of military, of a military culture in space, right? When people imagine Space Force, they're thinking maybe of Star Trek or any of these sci-fi TV shows and movies that romanticize this idea. And it seems as though the U.S. military and Trump have very much taken advantage of this, that this idea that it's going to, you know, we for us to establish a space force is a very glossy, romantic notion of an armed force keeping the peace in space.
Well, this Star Wars scenario is no film. It's no movie. It's no work of fiction. I did a TV documentary, it's online, Star Wars Returns. That's when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney achieved power, and they were going to revive Reagan's Star Wars, his plan. And the architecture of the Reagan Star Wars, which is what we're heading for with a Space Force, orbiting battle platforms, and on them, hypervelocity guns, particle beams, and laser weapons. And to top it off, these weapons need a lot of energy. So the plan was to have nuclear reactors aboard these battle platforms, providing the power for these weapons. In fact, I also wrote a book called Weapons in Space, and I mentioned the documentary. In both, I quote James Abramson, who was the commander of the Star Wars program, called for a time the Strategic Defense Initiative, saying that without reactors in orbit, we're going to need a long, long extension cord from Earth bringing up power. But in any case, what would be overhead would be these horrid weapons, these battle platforms, and nuclear reactors. And as I note, Russia and China have not wanted to move up to space and get involved in weaponizing space. But with the U.S. doing this, I guaranteed they're not going to sit still. They're going to respond in kind. And consider a shooting war with battle platforms and hypervelocity guns and laser weapons and nuclear reactors above our heads and the debris, a lot of it radioactive debris, raining down. I mean, for those who are or Trekkies who are into space, we would not be able to get a rocket off Earth out into space for eons because there'd be so much debris. Not to mention the lives lost the huge amount. I mean, it would be a space war would be a calamity, not an entertaining film.
There's also the issue of the cost. We're told there's no money for Medicare for All. Let's cut food stamps. Let's trim all of those programs that taxpayers fund out of their pockets for other taxpayers. Let's instead throw more money at the military. The entire National Defense Authorization Act package ran into $738 billion. Of that, some portion designated to Space Force, but in the future, if Space Force is now a formally established branch of the military, I can imagine future years where that aspect, that line item in the Pentagon budget is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger because now we've opened the door.
Well, it's going to be billions upon, it's been said by those in the aerospace industry, that a Star Wars system would be the biggest industrial enterprise, in world history. As to how the money would be raised for the hundreds for the space warfare systems, entitlement programs, and I follow the space industry trade journals, and what they've been talking about is taking it from Medicare, taking it from Social Security, this money. I mean, not only are they going to try to take our lives, they're going to go to take our money.
And so that aspect you just raised is absolutely key. The aerospace industry, which has a lot of lobbyists in Washington, D.C., are among the biggest beneficiaries of such a program, right? I mean, yes, of course, there'll be some jobs for technicians, there'll be new military recruits, but by and large, we're talking about a massive windfall for corporations that make, that will be making the hardware that Space Force will require.
Yeah, and I mean, for regard to this program, some might say, no, this all can't be happening. In fact, since I wrote that article that appeared in Counterpunch, and it's online, what the U.S. military, the Pentagon has put out as its plan to change the name of various U.S. Air Force bases to U.S. Space Force bases. Hmm. And the communities, for example, Peterson Air Force Base, the Schriever Air Force Base, I'm sorry, in Colorado, that would become the Schriever Space Force Base. So the political combination here has been the aerospace industry, folks like Boeing. I mean, not only have they been busy screwing up the 737, they're up to their neck in military contracts. And there was a congressman from the Seattle area, a Democratic congressman, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, who was a leader in, let me see if I can get his name, I think it was Lee, in pushing for this National Defense Authorization Act, providing for the creation of a space force. So you have the aerospace industry pushing. You have, and ultimately you'll have even more so of this, places where components of this space force will be based. And then you have Trump, this preposterous U.S. president we have, who actually originally started talking about, and I've written about this too, and others have, in fact, National Public Radio had a piece about initially when Trump started talking, it was a little group of Marines in California, and he mentioned maybe we'd have a space force, and he got a big laugh, and then later he said, well, maybe we should have a space force.
Right, it sort of started out as this flippant remark during a speech that just has now snowballed into being part of a law that he signed.
Yeah. And maybe I can note how I got into this, if you call it a story. I broke the story in The Nation magazine back in 1986 about how the next mission of the Challenger, the shuttle, which was planned for May of 1986, involved a there was to be a little rocket space probe, basically, on board, powered by plutonium. And in The Nation, I wrote this editorial, was titled The Lethal Shuttle for The Nation, which was published front page, about if that the accident had occurred in May of 86, not January of 86, it would have been more than seven brave astronauts dying. I mean, you wouldn't want to go to Disney for a few centuries. I mean, if that plutonium was dispersed, particularly as dust, plutonium is regarded as the most radioactive substance that exists. It would have been an enormous disaster. And then I kept wondering about what did they need a plutonium fuel space and so forth. Like just a few years ago, NASA launched a space probe, went to Jupiter, and solar panels, photovoltaic panels, provided the onboard power, not plutonium. And as I dug deeper and deeper into this question, I began to see how NASA and the U.S. military have embraced the use of nuclear power in space, running kind of in parallel. And then I got into the architecture of Star Wars, what I was mentioning before, of these nuclear-powered hypervelocity guns and particle beams and laser weapons on battlefield platforms above our heads. That started me, and I've been on this issue for more than 30 years.
So we now have a situation where this Space Force has become a reality, handed to Trump by Democrats and Republicans. I should mention at the same time that the Democrats were impeaching Trump, Donald Trump is going to go down in history as a president that created Space Force. And unfortunately, that's going to be one of the marks of distinctions, positive distinctions of his presidency rather than negative distinctions. There's been so much sort of, going back to what I was saying earlier about the kind of romanticization of this idea of a space force. There's been so much glossy media coverage, headlines, talking about why we have to have a space force and why it's such a great idea from, liberal outlets, not just the right-wing outlets. What do you think is needed? Do we need a very strong public education campaign to remind Americans, just as destructive as the ground military is in terms of the wars we fight, the money that it sucks up, the people that it kills and maims and the PTSD, that a Space Force would be essentially more of the same?
Well, I think people have to know about this. And I'm a professor of journalism, and the coverage of this space, I mean, have you seen it on the NBC News or ABC? Have you seen stories in news, the mainstream media, they've been nowhere on this. People don't know, and people have to know. And then people have to take action. And the organization I would suggest people get involved with, and it's been around since 1992, it's been the leading organization internationally fighting the weaponization of space, is the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. And again, they go together. You can connect to the Global Network on its website. It's www.space4peace.org. It's based in Maine. They have international conferences and protests and so forth. People are gonna have to get active. I feel that what stupid things that people do can be undone. I mean, maybe that's looking through rose-colored glasses, but I think, for example, of what happened after World War I, and the world realized that the use of chemical weapons was horrific. All those deaths on the battlefields of Europe during World War I, and as a result, there was a series of treaties afterwards which banned the use of chemical weapons. Now, that hasn't been 100% subscribe to, but pretty much it's held. Here with space, as Craig Eisenroth in the film that I did, Star Wars Returns, says, he was a young State Department officer who involved in the creation of the Outer Space Treaty, which now incidentally has been signed onto by most nations of the world. He said the concept was to prevent war in space before it happened. So came the outer space treaty. So it isn't like we have to do a new treaty, though the Paris Treaty would be good to add to the outer space treaty. We should just stick with the outer space treaty, insist that the outer space treaty holds and space be retained for peace. But that's going to take, considering so many Democrats going along with this madness, considering the silence of so much of media, that's going to take grassroots action. And again, what I recommend is getting connected with and getting active with the global network against weapons and nuclear power in space.
And that is space, the number 4, peace.org. And finally, I just want to also ask you, in light of the fact that we are struggling to figure out energy sources to run life, human life on the planet, with the climate crisis looming, you were mentioning earlier the amount of energy that it's going to require. Of course, it will end up forcing more nuclear power in space, but it's just incredible that we're going to be wasting time, energy, and technology figuring out how to send up massive amounts of military hardware and weapons of mass destruction into space instead of figuring out how humans can survive on this planet without impacting our atmosphere, right? I mean, there's a climate change angle to this that I haven't seen climate justice activists link either.
Well, like on Earth, in space, there's no need for nuclear power. I mean, way back, we're talking here about the early 60s, satellites that were launched by the U.S. and the Soviet Union were powered by plutonium or actual little nuclear reactors. And then there were accidents. The biggest one, biggest U.S. one, there's been a number of ones involving the Soviet Union and then Russia, was the Snap 9A accident in 1964, which didn't achieve orbit. The satellite came down. It broke up in the atmosphere. Plutonium was dispersed all over the planet. Dr. John Goffman of the University of California at Berkeley, an MD, a PhD, a giant in the area of radioactivity, connected that to a significant spike in lung cancer on Earth. And in the wake of the Snap 9A, the satellites, all our satellites now are solar powered. The International Space Station is solar powered. But we would develop this Star Wars program using nuclear because of the extremely high energy needs of these terrible weapons that are proposed. It's going backwards, right, in terms of what we know now. And the madness has to stop.
Well, Carl, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight with us. We'll post a link to your article as well as the website that you mentioned on our site. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
My guest is Carl Grossman, a professor of journalism at State University of New York, and he has been writing about Space Force. We'll link to a couple of articles that he just published online about the issue. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.